Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. And today we are getting an update on Mexico congressional measures with Lorena Beltran, the CEO of Cannabis Salud and a congressional outside advisor to the Mexican Congress. Lorena, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you guys for the invitation. It's an honor.
And Lorena, tell us how have you been impacted by COVID? How has life been for you in Mexico over the last weeks and month?
Well, right now the government have declared that we are in phase three. But you know what? I think it's different than other countries. Since the beginning, our president never showed any panic. He was never in the state of panic. So I think that also really helped, you know, our people, our society to stay calm. The exact number of people with COVID is hard to say. You know, it's just different numbers. We are not for sure, you know, exactly what's going on with this. But we see people still on the streets. You know, of course, that traffic, it's less, like 70% less, which is a lot for Mexico City. You know, 23 million people, the traffic was insane. Right now, you know, you can drive freely. But yeah, there's people out there and, you know, not a lot of panic. And we are trying to go back to normal in probably like a month and a half or so. School, it's online, and kids are going back to school after, well, May 30th, but then there's also just a week, you know, of school, and then we have summer. But I don't think it's that bad here in Mexico.
Well, that we certainly are glad to hear that. And nonetheless, you've had a lot of social distancing measures down in Mexico. This has led to elements of government not necessarily meeting, convening on their regular scheduling. And this has led to an extension in the cannabis legalization discussions. And we just got an update on that in the last couple of days. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, that's one of the most unfortunate things that happened here in Mexico, because on March 24th, that was the last day that the Senate had participation in the different sessions, voting for different things. And just right before the 24th, I think it was at the beginning of March, that the Senate had a first voting on the law initiative, and we had 23 votes in favor against, it was less than 10 votes, you know, that were negative. So the first phase, you know, it was approved in the general concept of the law initiative. So that was the first official step in the government towards the legalization of cannabis. So it was very, very unfortunate that, you know, they had to stop the sessions. And of course, they're asking for more time, and they're pushing the voting to the next period of sessions, which is between September and December 2020. So, you know, we have a lot of communication with senators and the Congress in general, and they really want to pass this. You know, they're going to try to push it in the extraordinary session, which is May and June, but for sure, we know that there's already an official document
at the Mexican Senate, and we were talking through some of these things, the excitement and the nervous nature of what was going on was obvious to me. It seemed to me that this was the culmination of such hard work for so many people for so long, and that you've been so intimately involved in Mexico in terms of this redefining cannabis and regulating the plant. What types of features does that legislation have, and what types of discussions are left to be had to really bring that to the finish line?
Well, you know, right now, because of the situation we are going through in terms of, you know, the concern about the health mainly of people and the economic crisis that, you know, right now happening, starting to happen in our country, I think cannabis can be taken as one of the projects that's going to help with this crisis. So we have been talking to these legislators about changing some of the articles in the law initiative in order to push for faster economic growth when this bill passes. So if we see the law initiative right now, how it is, the first thing, once it's approved in the regulation, they first we're going to be giving licenses of importation, just first phase import and sell and distribution and sell. And then after that license, a few months later, they were going to start giving the licenses for points of sale. And then the last licenses to be giving were going to be the licenses to grow, which doesn't really make sense, you know, for to start the industry in Mexico if we can just import for the first 6 months or a year, you know. So now because of this crisis that we're going to be living more strongly here in Mexico, we need to change that. We need to have the first licenses to be to grow and points of sale. If the government, you know, is trying to find a way to make, to have more taxes, you know, for this crisis, well, we all know that the point of sale is where you need to go, right? And we need to start producing in Mexico, not just importing. So, of course, there's going to be some changes in this law initiative because of the situation we're living in, which is a good thing, you know, because the government is also trying to implement more programs in agriculture. Again, this virus, you know, it happens more, it expands more in cities where more population is. Over there in rural areas, you know, it's minimal. So that's why also the government wants to implement more projects in rural communities. And everywhere you look, whatever you want to implement, any program that the government wants to do in Mexico can be linked with the cannabis industry because, you know, we can activate agriculture, we can have more employment for these people and really, really help, you know, with this economic crisis and health crisis.
You know, Bob, I want to put a question to you. Lorena talks about relying only on import material rather than producing material. Is there maybe another country that has undergone legalization that has relied on an import-only model and faced some challenges? Maybe
import
another
perspective,
country in Latin America. That
has been one of the models that we've seen, particularly on the marijuana side of the cannabis industry. We've seen the... for example, Germany in Europe, Germany doesn't allow for domestic production of marijuana. That material has been imported from Canada, from Uruguay, from a number of different places around the world. We've seen that model take hold in limited jurisdictions. The idea of being reliant entirely on imported material is kind of the opposite of what we've seen in some of the Latin America-based regulatory programs where they allow for cultivation, but for export only versus importing it. Importing it would seem to indicate that it does service a domestic market, which with Mexico's large population and with the opportunities that exist there, it really creates an interesting opportunity. When you look at the fact of the matter that when you go south out of Denver, Colorado, and you go several hundred miles to the south, and you're in another country, and that there are new policies and new regulations all the way down to the southern tip of Chile, looking at cannabis, and these are all recent developments within the last couple of years. The fact that Mexico is shifting towards a domestic model, reliant on import in the first instance, is interesting because it does support that domestic model. But being reliant on imports, to Lorena's point, is not exactly the most wise, particularly when Mexico has such a rich history with farming. It has the ability to pivot and put cultivars in the ground and produce rich plant material and folks that are willing, ready, and able to do so.
Well, and Lorena, let me put that back to you as well. What, how important is it for farmers in Mexico, for the Mexican economy to have domestic production? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Right. I think the important thing about cultivating cannabis is to implement regenerative agriculture. Why? Because here in Mexico, and we had the experience with other crops like avocado or cacao, when back in the day, the prices were so high for these products, and people will stop growing other vegetables or fruits to go and grow avocados or cacao, right? Or just cut the tree in order to have the land, because there's a government program that's going to give you, 5,000 pesos per month if you grow this type of product. And then people go there and cut trees. It happens so much here in Mexico. So we don't want that to happen again with cannabis, because everybody thinks, cannabis is going to make me the richest, or this is the crop that everybody's talking about, so let's do it. So they stop growing other stuff, and they cut more trees in order just to grow marijuana. So how do we prevent this, and how do we help people not only to make money, but to have food to eat? It's through regenerative agriculture. And this subject, this type of system is now in the Congress. We're talking about it, to implement a few rules also in the regulation, that if you want to grow cannabis in rural areas with the small farmers, it has to be through the regenerative agriculture, which means you need to have other plants, other trees where you're growing cannabis. You have to rotate them, to do it organically, because we want to clean the soils. We want to produce food for your communities. These people don't have anything to eat. Our country is so rich in so many things, but it's also very poor. We need to create this balance. This balance can only happen with regenerative systems. So we are trying to implement pilot programs to prove, that this can work. And yes, we have the cash crop, which is cannabis, but you also are producing your own food.
That's such an important point. And I hear a lot of parallels with what you're talking about and regenerative agriculture with the hemp industry. Here in the United States, farmers who they just bet the whole farm on a crop that they thought would make them rich overnight and have been burned. That's certainly something that we've seen, particularly last year, with all the biomass sitting on farms, and really important, I think, that Mexico is getting out ahead of it, and
Mexico had begun to import
instead of people just going
or allow regulated imports of cannabinoid products from hemp, CBD in particular, over the last year and a half plus, and then recently had sort of suspended the issuance of those import permits. As it sorted these issues out. And one of the things that we were talking about was the focus on hemp for all that it can do, not just looking at hemp for a single solution of getting someone rich, so to speak, the idea that farmers should make more money on the highest profitable crop remains. But at the end of the day, the notion that growing a CBD single-purpose crop is going to make a farmer rich is a bit of a misnomer. Now, it might have more legs in a new environment, a new economy. But to Lorena's point, the hemp plant is so rich with nutrients. If you look at the protein content that comes out of hemp seeds, it's almost second to none. If you look at the omega-3, omega-6 content, this plant is, in fact, a food source. And I do think that, you know, even though there is a problem with the food supply chain, as Lorena points out, in Mexico, that problem will likely be exacerbated on a global scale. So if you can produce industrial hemp and feed your population within Mexico and then look at it as an export material from a food perspective, those farmers will sustain, those farmers will survive, and they'll plant something that can be, sustainable as part of an agricultural economy.
And, you know, it's interesting, we're using as part of an agricultural economy.
And, you know, it's interesting, we're using, you know, the words cannabis, hemp, marijuana. I'm interested in the legislation as it stands in Mexico right now. Is there a distinction made between hemp and marijuana, or that a certain THC threshold that is enforced, or is it really just thought of it as cannabis? This is an issue near and dear to your heart, I know, Bob, with respect to how we define the cannabis industry, but interested in your thoughts on that too, Lorena.
Sure. Right now in the law initiative, the definition is non-psychoactive and psychoactive cannabis. We don't see the word hemp in the law initiative, but we are trying to make that distinction. And of course, now with the situation and the voting of this initiative, it's given us more time also to help them, the legislators, shape this initiative according to the real needs of Mexico right now with the situation that we have. So definitely being industrial hemp, something completely out of, even CBD or THC, right now we're still, going around this subject because it's easier for them to just liberate, industrial hemp so we can start growing at least in fiber. The thing is that they get so confused with CBD mainly because it's another molecule that's helping, with medical treatments. So that's why they don't want to have that like so freely out there, because even though it's non-psychoactive, it's a molecule that's helping, treat different conditions. So they're not seeing either CBD as part of an industrial hemp plant. So it's just, a little bit complicated in their head. But if we can take industrial hemp for industrial purposes, I think we can, give the first step to also help these farmers, for the fiber and for his food. And these people need food, right? So I think it makes more sense for Mexico, according to our culture, for our ancestral knowledge, to many factors, to see the cannabis industry, the cannabis plant, as food, fibers to build your house, right? And herbal remedies. And it's different in every country, but if Mexico, adopts the term herbal remedy for this plant, it's unbelievable how people change their minds. If they're against and they hear this is a herbal remedy. We have so much knowledge in herbal remedies. We have so many medicinal plants that if you say, hey, there's a little sublingual oil, it's a herbal remedy. They don't even care, when you say, oh, well, it's cannabis, it's a herbal remedy, because we're so used to that. We don't go to the doctor until we're almost dying here in Mexico. We are not that type of people that goes to the doctor for everything. Until we can't anymore, then we see a doctor. First, we try the plants, we try the teas, we try, the grandma's remedy before we see the doctor. So it's been working, to look at it like that. But again, you know, our legislators and mainly the health ministry is the one that it's kind of blocking the legalization of, you
Talk
know, having
using
the CBD, the hemp plant,
plant
et cetera.
Building homes and all these things that we know the plant is capable of doing and we've seen all over the world. What's the reaction you get from legislators and lobbyists and folks that you've been working with? Do they look at you and do their eyes glaze over as if you must be coming from another planet? Because it's not intuitive when you don't know much about this plant to realize that the cannabis plant is something more than something that can be smoked, that you can do some other things with it, not the least of which is feed your people, not the most of which is build a house or create fuel from it. What kind of reactions do you get when you bring those topics up in the context of discussing this at a policy level?
Right. Yeah, and I have a great example because I took some building material made out of hemp before we went into quarantine. And I talked to a few senators and I showed them the blocks, you know, and all the materials that I have with me, the textiles and stuff. And they were so amazed, you know, and impressed. And I was able to see how their mentality shifted right there. And they were like, wow, this is stronger than concrete. Wow, you can build a house with this. Oh my God, can you imagine how many houses we can build for these communities? And I'm like, yes, that's the point, you know, per hectare even. You know, you can build, you know, a structure of this amount of square meters. And definitely that changed their mentality. And that day when I showed them the materials, one of the senators is the president of the Environmental Commission in the Senate. And right there, he's like, we need to talk about this. And we're going to have a forum about all the ideas to help the environment, you know, to develop sustainable projects, and this has to be there. Unfortunately, the right on that week where they had to cancel the session, but, you know, that was great to see. You know, definitely people trying to wrap their heads around the other uses
about
of hemp.
How this industry has kept connected historically, or at least over the last several years, through events and conferences, and we've seen each other quite literally all over the world. But we talked about an event that you were a part of that was to take place in Mexico in August. I don't know if a decision's been made there. Maybe you can touch base on just some of the thinking in that regard. But how have you stayed connected to the cannabis community, the cannabis industry, while things have been locked down for the last month plus?
Well, that's great that you're asking because, so at the beginning of the year, Dan, I don't know if you remember, Bob, that we were planning on launching a communication campaign built by the companies in the emerging industry, private companies, nonprofits, individuals, everybody coming together in this communication campaign to push, you know, the legislators to really vote on the deadline or before the deadline, of course, because the Supreme Court said, hey, you only have until April 30th to vote. So at the beginning of the year, as a community, we were like, hey, if we just leave, you know, and not do anything and let them vote when the Supreme Court says, they're not going to do it. For some reason, we had that feeling inside, you know, we need to pressure. We need to do something about it. We need to be more present as a united group, you know, because then you see the lobbies for the pharmaceutical industry. They have just one team of lobbyists doing the work for the whole pharmaceutical industry. Then you have the petroleum lobby. Then you have, you know, whatever industry, they have a group of lobbyists, you know, doing the work for that specific group. And in this case, because we were all over the place, each company had their own lobbyist group. It was also confusing for the legislators. You know, all these groups coming from different sites with different information, different interests, it was making it very hard. So we were planning on this campaign. At the end, we couldn't launch it because a lot of companies said that they were going to be voting. Then we have the situation, you know, obviously nobody was expecting this pandemic. But now that they're pushing the voting until September, then right now, that's when the companies came together again and said, hey, is that communication campaign still an option? Because we're in. So now we're coming together with this campaign that actually we launched the first video yesterday. And I want to share it with you guys because this is going to go viral nationally. We are tired of waiting, and mainly we are tired of our legislators, the president, not looking at this as a priority project for Mexico because we need it more than ever right now. So through this communication campaign called the Movement for Legalization for 2020, we have from private companies, foundations, we have senators on board, we have artists, we have influencers, and you are going to be seeing this campaign very soon, not only in Mexico. I know it's going to reach the world because everybody wants to know what's happening in Mexico, when they can do business, when they can come in, right? So we need the support, not only nationally, but you guys, internationally, because they need to know that we're here and we're not, you know, in our house, not doing anything, waiting to see what's going to happen. We're working, and we're working together more than ever.
Well, that's excellent, Lorena. And we will be sharing that as well as soon as it is made available. You know, it is nice to hear kind of a silver lining from coronavirus is that everybody was able to come together, take advantage of this time and the extending of this deadline and from, you know, to September and December of this year to kind of mobilize that support again. We really like to hear that and kind of see the positivity in this, in the COVID pause. And, you know, anytime you're talking about cannabis, it always seems, you know, the word education just always comes up again and again. You are such an excellent educator, such a wonderful person to be speaking with policymakers and helping guide their decisions and shaping legislation. So, Lorena, we thank you for coming on to the Hoban Minute today and to all the progress being made in Mexico as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@Hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.